Welcome to the Progressive Radio News Hour. I'm Steve Lindman. My guest today is Paul Craig Roberts. Paul really represents the best of government officials. Paul is so forthright in his criticism where criticism is due. And we'll get into a few things that he wants to talk about, including prosecutors. I'm sure he means U.S. ones, or at least mainly U.S. ones, turning truth and rule of law principles on their head. He's got a new article. We'll talk about that a little bit. If we have any time, we'll maybe say a few things about Mali. I wrote a couple of articles on Mali. The French may be the elite lead attack dog, but make no mistake, it's Washington's war. All the wars going on in North Africa, Middle East, Central Asia, they're Washington's wars. I just want to say a couple of words about the Israeli elections. They happened on Tuesday. I'll let Paul get into what he wants to discuss. But I wrote several articles leading up to the election. I put out a new one today. I called it Fascism Wins Big in Israel. And let me give credit where credit is deserved. The best of Israel's media is Haaretz. They publish in Hebrew. They also publish in English. I don't read Hebrew, so I read it in English. They're not perfect. They get some things wrong. They talk about Israel electing a centrist government. Can't imagine how they ever came up with that conclusion. There is nothing centrist about the government that was elected. Israelis go to the poll and elect parties. And to qualify to have any seats in the Israeli parliament, the Knesset, they need to get at least 2% of the vote. So some 34 parties participated, if I have the number right. 34 parties, amazing. Only a handful of them really mattered. Well, the hardline ones dominated. Of the 120 seats in the Knesset, 102, over 80% are dominated by hardliners. And I'll let Haaretz characterize the way they described Netanyahu. He's only one of a very, very dangerous rogue bunch. But in at least one of its editorials, it called Netanyahu, quote-unquote, fascist. Haaretz's words. Can you imagine the New York Times calling either a Republican or Democrat administration in America fascist? Maybe in my next life, not in this one. Anyway, I had to write about the election in the run-up. I wrote about it today. As coalition partners get chosen, I'm certain I'll have something more to say, because it's not going to be good, and it doesn't matter which one. Roll the dice. You know, shuffle a deck. Pick any ones they want. The ones that get the most votes need to have some representation in Netanyahu's cabinet. He'll probably stay prime minister. He only got a smidgen. His party, Likud, Israel, I can never pronounce it. Israel is our home, is the English translation. A merger of Israel is our home, and Likud. Likud is extremely extremist, dare I call it that way. Netanyahu is their nominal leader. He is literally internally despised by some of the top people around him. And six former heads of Israel's security service called Shin Bet came out publicly, an unprecedented act, came out publicly and denounced him. Can you imagine six former, say, CIA chiefs in America coming out and denouncing a U.S. leader? Well, maybe someday, but it's never happened to my memory. Anyway, this happened. They went public, an unprecedented act. Others have done the same thing, publicly, quietly. A lot of it has been done. They say things like, they don't trust this guy. He's probably going to stay prime minister. Heaven help Israel, heaven help the region, heaven help all of us. Paul, welcome. I had to get some of that in. I've written so much about this, I wanted to make a quick comment about it.
Yes, well, it's very good, Stephen. You're brave to be a self-hating Jew.
I have no doubt that Mossad has a building file on me, Shin Bet also. Well, I mean, if they want information, if they'll just send me their email address, I'll CC them on everything I do and save them the trouble. Same goes for CIA, for FBI. I'm very accommodating, Paul.
Well, you know, the peace process has always been a cloak for Israeli government theft of the Palestinian land.
And oh, absolutely.
What's so amazing is how many dupes there are in the United States. You mentioned the Harvard professor, Alan Dershowitz.
Dershowitz, yeah.
But everyone is disordinary people are all convinced that Israel is surrounded by these bloodthirsty Palestinian terrorists, and that they're, you know, fighting for their lives, the Israelis. And of course, the story is the opposite. Palestinians surrounded by the bloodthirsty Israelis. So it's an amazing situation.
It's truth turned on its head, Paul. And of course,
right.
you get the rogue media, what I call the scoundrel media, that literally twist things. And they blame Palestinians for Israeli crimes. The last Gaza war, the mini war against Gaza, that went on mid-November-ish or so, 8 days, called Pillar of Cloud. Palestinians were blamed for self-defense, Paul. There were multiple Israeli attacks, and as a Palestinian leader, the head of its militant brigade, the Qassam Brigades, he was heavily involved in negotiating a truce, a ceasefire, and he wanted to put fail-safe mechanisms into it. And Israel murdered him in mid-November because Israel did not want peace. They wanted war. And they killed eight other Palestinians at the same time. There were other attacks, and Palestinians were killed. And finally, Hamas.
Well, you know, it's been going on, hasn't it, for what, 60 years? Or
oh, indeed something? So. Indeed so. 1948,
really think,
the war, the occupation from 1967. It never ends. I mean, it really is outrageous. The truth is there for anybody to find. But what really bothers me, Paul, is there are good people who know better, and they don't support these things, but they don't take the trouble to find it out. They watch TV. They read the New York Times. And they think that they're getting the truth when they're not.
I'm afraid that's true. There's very little truth, if any, in the mainstream media, and hasn't been for a long time, but of course it's much worse now. But we find that in every subject, don't we?
We sure do. And it's a very perilous time, and extremely, I mean, I literally say, Paul, and I believe it, that we possibly are living in the most perilous time in world history, where I just don't know what's going to be happening. We get into one war after another. We partner with Israel, with the key NATO partners, Britain, France, Germany, Italy, Spain. I mean, this goes on endlessly. I mean, where does this end? We know the Syria war is raging. There certainly is a real threat that Iran could be attacked. Iran is no powerless country. The entire region could be embroiled. I mean, literally, China and Russia may decide they want to draw a red line and not take this anymore. Are they literally going to let America conquer every country and literally surround both of them to their borders, target them with offensive, defensive missiles, claim their waters, claim land that territory that there really is in their region? They really threaten their interests. Will they finally say no more? Is it possible that we could get into another major war? It's hard to believe that could happen. But who would have thought that we would have gotten into World War One? We sure could have avoided World War One and World War Two, but we didn't. So I guess World War Three is possible, Paul.
Oh yeah, I think it most certainly is. What disturbs me is that it's now propaganda worldwide. I mean, in terms of the Western world, you get the same lies all over Europe that you get from our media, and I'm not sure what the South Americans know. There's not a whole lot of their papers in English translation, and I can't read Spanish anymore, so.
Neither can I. I honestly
think even the Russians are partly brainwashed because so much, in fact, the entire political opposition in Russia is funded by the U.S. government through the National Endowment for Democracy and all the NGOs that it funnels the money out to. So when you have the political opposition of the major power like Russia, funded by Washington.
Oh, indeed. So I wrote
and of
about
course, the Chinese don't want to lose their markets here, so they're cautious. And I don't know. I think that when you have nothing but lies determining public perception of every event, whether it's 9/11 or Mali or Israel or Syria or whatever, it's very hard to see a positive outcome. And the voices that raise up, like yours, they're just not loud enough. They're not, it's not what people hear on the news around the clock or Fox News all day long. And they hear so much of this junk, this lies, this complete fabrications of events that when something comes out from somebody else, it just sounds so off the wall, they don't pay attention to it.
It's really true, Paul. And, of course, the corporate propaganda machine, which is mainly TV where most people get their news, this goes on around the clock. We're old enough to remember when there were no cable channels and you had three broadcasters and what passes for public television, and you got much, much less what's called news reporting then than now. But now you've got multiple stations, and they go around the clock. And the power of repetition literally gets people to believe black is white.
Right. That's right. That's right. Well, let's talk about how two federal prosecutors murdered Aaron Swartz.
Oh, I would love to talk about that.
You know, he was the guy trying to keep the internet free and all of that sort of thing. And it looks like this very ambitious Hispanic woman, Carmen Ortiz, she's I think the U.S. attorney, and then I think Stephen Hayman was the assistant U.S. attorney, and they decided that it would help their career if they could get a prominent activist who's been working in behalf of Internet Freeman, and so they frame him up with bogus charges, and they exhaust his ability to pay lawyers, and they keep adding bogus charges, which are impossible for anybody to defend against, even billionaires. You have to remember that's the way they got Michael Milken. And you may know that the same propaganda about him is what they tell about the Palestinians and Aaron Swartz and everybody else. If a billionaire or a multibillionaire can't, with the best SEC, former SEC lawyers, can't beat a fake case brought by that criminal Giuliani, what hope does a kid like Aaron Swartz have, or anybody? None of us have any chance if they bring a case. So what has happened is that law no longer serves justice. It's used by prosecutors to serve their careers. And their careers are served in two ways. One, a high number of convictions. And the other is convictions of high-level people like Michael Milken or Martha Stewart or the defense attorney Lynn Stewart or somebody like Aaron Swartz. So they decide, look, we can destroy this person and it'll boost our career. We'll climb over his body to a higher status. We'll run for political office. That was what Giuliani did. That's how he used Mike Milken, was to get elected mayor of New York, and he was hoping to go on into the presidency from that type of thing. So the law is a tool that's perverted by prosecutors, and not just federal ones. It's now just about everywhere. Any big city prosecutor is the same, where they simply say, we're not interested in innocence or guilt. They don't pay any, you know, if the police bring a case against somebody, a long time ago, at least in theory, the prosecutor would look at the case and see, was it a good one? Did he have confidence that it was correct and that the guy was probably guilty? Should they prosecute it or not? Well, now, what that meant was, in the past, they couldn't try every case. They had to choose between where the police had credible evidence in the minds of the prosecutor and where they didn't. Well, now they don't follow it. They just look at it and say, okay, throw on 10 more charges, and we'll see if his attorney comes with a plea bargain deal. If he doesn't, we'll throw on 10 more or 30 more or however many. You may remember in the end, Giuliani was leaking to the press in New York that he had a 300-count indictment against Michael Milken.
Oh, my God. You know, it's been so long, so I don't remember.
Yeah, so this is what they do. They pile on charges, fake, totally fake. The prosecutor knows they're fake. They use them to convince, they use them so that the attorneys representing the defendant can say, look, there's no way we can defend against all of this, even if they're all bogus, and even if the jury throws out 90% of them, you're still going to prison the rest of your life. So let us make a deal with them, and we'll admit to something that didn't even happen, and all the prosecutor wants is a conviction. And so you don't want to, you can go to jail for a few years, or you can risk going for the rest of your life. So let us work that out for you. So that's how the justice system works. And, of course, if you're a real high-level defendant, you can't even make a plea bargain without still going to jail for some time, like they did to Milken and Martha Stewart, neither of whom were guilty of anything. So if really rich people are powerless because the law does not serve justice and the prosecutors have no interest in it whatsoever, it's their career. The more convictions I get, the more PR I can make about myself, how effective I am. I can convince all the dumb people that I'm saving them from criminals and getting the rich and doing all that sort of stuff. And particularly if I can get a really high-level case that I can keep in the news forever while the defendant's attorneys struggle to come up with a plea bargain that I can accept, and I can stall that long enough to get more and more coverage, and I can turn Michael Milken into a total demon, and this will secure my political future. So that's the way it works. And people are unaware of it until it happens to them. I've been writing about it probably for 25, 30 years, and one of my most important books, which I called How the Law Was Lost, and the publisher calls The Tyranny of Good Intentions, documents how prosecutors, long before 9/11 and the police state, had already destroyed all the constitutional protections that we have in the interest of their own career. And a lot of people don't understand that about 95-96% of all felony cases are resolved with a plea bargain. They never go to trial. And so the police evidence is never tested in court. And the police have learned this, so they don't even bother to investigate the crimes anymore. They just pick up somebody who's a likely suspect, who has a record, deliver him to the prosecutors, and they pile on charges until he admits to something that didn't happen. So that's the way the system works. And the consequence is that the United States, which has about 300 million people, very small, for example, compared to China, which has four times that, and allegedly the United States is a democracy, and China allegedly is an authoritarian, one-party rule state. But Americans have not only a larger percentage of their population in prison than does authoritarian China, they have a larger absolute number of people in prison. There are more Americans in total number in prison in the United States than there are Chinese in China, which has a four times the population and an authoritarian state. So what that shows you is that all the pretense here about freedom and democracy, it's just another big lie. You haven't got any freedom or any democracy when you've got no rights in law, because the law has been subverted to serve the interests of prosecutors. And that is not an exaggeration. That's exactly the situation in America today. Every prosecution in itself is a crime, because the prosecutor lies. He withholds exculpatory evidence. He puts pressure on the defendant to make a plea bargain so the case doesn't have to be tried, because trying a case takes a lot of time. You can get, 50 plea bargains in the course of one trial. And so your record looks so much better. Look at all the convictions I got. So that's the situation. And what they did to Aaron Swartz, they made it quite clear that he was going to be crucified. There was nothing he could do to protect himself. He was out of money. I guess his supporters didn't raise enough to try to keep the fight going. Just a minute.
My cat.
Hey. I've got two cats that are partially wild.
I should have them on one time as a guest.
Yeah, they're partially wild. They accept me. They don't accept anybody else. And occasionally they get into one another.
That adds a little spice to the program, Paul. Anyway, I'll let you continue.
Well, that's it, really. I mean, this poor guy is... Yeah, and then, you know, I don't... let me just give you the end of the story. You know, after he commits suicide, the two prosecutors drop all charges. In other words, they simply admit they didn't have a case. So, now, how can these people be allowed to stay in office? They're criminals. In my opinion, Carmen Ortiz and Stephen Hyman are criminals. They have murdered somebody. They should be arrested and put on trial. There's enough evidence to convict them. But nothing will happen to them, except that perhaps her career won't go as glorious now as she had hoped. But nothing will happen. I think 25,000 people signed a petition to the White House for it to be fired or impeached or something. But nothing will happen to them. The prosecutors are really hardly ever held accountable. The only one I know of recently that was held accountable was that guy who tried the Duke University lacrosse team. He claimed that they had raped a black stripper that had been hired for one of their parties, and the whole thing was a fraud, and he didn't get away with it, which is highly unusual.
I remember the case, but I don't remember anything about him.
Well, he ended up being removed from office and disbarred and roundly denounced for a fabricated case that cost the defendants $5.5 million. That's what their families had to pay in lawyers, $5.5 million.
Oh, my God.
Fight a bogus case that would have put three young men in prison for 50 years. So, and the guy had, and you see, these prosecutors have no moral conscience. They don't care. It doesn't bother them that they destroy people. It's the way they have successful careers. It's not like they're out there getting these vicious criminals. They could care less. They'd rather have some high-profile guy who hadn't done anything. So the whole thing is so corrupt. And grand juries are supposed to be a check on the prosecutor's ability to indict people. But the grand jury, the way it works in the United States, the defendant has a chance, because he's not allowed any representation at the grand jury, and the grand jurors are just basically stupid people. And the prosecutor tells them, "Oh, you've got to help me get this criminal. We can't have crime in society." And that's how the way they get these indictments. And the dumb people sit there and say, "Oh, we can't have criminals," and they haven't any wits, and they've got no courage. And so the grand jury produces the indictment. Once you have the indictment, you get the plea bargain. So that's the American justice system. It is, beyond all doubt, the most corrupt in the world. It's probably the most corrupt that ever existed in the world.
Paul, you're so right. In the echo chamber, the major media, the scoundrel media echo chamber, when somebody is charged, especially in anything that's involved with what's called terrorism that has nothing to do with it, but they just say it is, and so often it can be a Muslim individual, usually a man, and they're charged, and it makes screaming media headlines, and they literally regurgitate the prosecutor's case or the government's case, And they throw in a few things from family members or whatever, but it's drowned out by the prosecutorial charges. I've written so many articles on dozens of wrongfully charged people who were charged, and they get into a courtroom, and the prosecutors literally intimidate the jurors to convict. They use secret evidence. Defense counsel has no access to it. They stage theatrics in the courtroom. It is outrageous, and you're right, Paul. And they have deep pockets. They can spend any amount they want. They can spend millions just building a case. They can do it over many months. And ordinary people just don't have a chance. They're going to get railroaded. My God, I could talk the rest of the day, Paul, about cases I wrote about. It was so outrageous, and innocent people are languishing, serving long prison terms for doing absolutely nothing. And some of them were prominent people who were targeted literally for doing the right thing. Paul? Oh, dear, are we disconnected? If we're disconnected, let's get Paul back on the line. When I think of somebody targeted for doing the wrong thing, I think of Lynn Stewart. I wrote a new article yesterday about her. I've written more about her than anybody else. Talked about her on my weekend program for the last 2 weekends. I mean, she literally was targeted for doing the right thing. A glorious human being. They should build a statue to her. She should be honored. She's a great human being. That's the greatest tribute I can pay her. She's a great human being. She got 10 years in prison for doing the wrong thing, and she's not well. She's a cancer survivor. It reoccurred. She's got a new cancer battle, and military health care is absolutely deplorable. They don't want to give her the treatment that she needs. Heaven only knows what's going to happen. She's been in prison a little over 3 years. She's got 7 years to go. They want her silenced. They don't care if she lives or dies. Paul, are we back connected again? Oh, dear. Don't know what happened to Paul. Well, we got a couple of minutes left. It's a big issue to me. The article is on my blog site. I called it Lynn Stewart's Social Justice Struggle for Social Justice Continues. But I've written so often about Lynn. I know her. I know her husband and a longtime human rights partner, Ralph Pointer. And I mean, marvelous people. They don't come any better than them, and other like-minded ones. These are the good people, and the good people literally get targeted for doing the right thing. It's a shameful process. I make no bones about it. America is a police state. It gets worse and worse all the time. Literally, tyranny is really on the brink. Paul, are you back?
Yeah, I'm back. Something happened. We got cut off.
We have a minute or so left.
Let me talk about this Pebble Mine.
I think we have about 60 seconds, so maybe you can summarize it briefly.
Yeah. The Global Mining Consortium is trying to put a massive open-pit mine in one of the last wildernesses of Africa. It will completely destroy all the salmon runs, Bristol Bay. And they seem to be able to lobby their way around the EPA's decision that this would be environmentally and economically disastrous. So this is the big fight going on right now in Congress, the lobbying. Will the scientific conclusions of EPA be overturned by the lobbying power of a global mining consortium? And we're about to see whether there's anything to Obama and his administration at all.
I don't expect much from Obama term two. I don't think you do either, Paul. Term one was so abominable, and I think it'll be worse in term two. I drafted an article on his new SEC chief. She will not like what I wrote about her. Mary Jo White. Well, Mary Shapiro was no jewel. She left in December, maybe mid-December or so. A temporary replacement is in there. Oh, we are out of time, Paul. I look forward to getting you back next month. I think I've got enough time to tell my listeners, join us Saturday and Sunday at 11 a.m. Eastern Time. Every Friday, I'm sorry, at 1 p.m. Eastern Time on the weekends. 11 a.m. on Fridays. Make it a regular habit.